I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State's anti-family, anti-child safety legislation gets the attention of President Donald Trump. Plus, as protests rage over deportations, ICE don't give a you-know-what. And embattled Linwood City Council member Josh Binda's political career might not survive this latest scandal. We'll discuss with a writer and the owner of the Linwood Times. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello on this Monday. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. For the record, the headline of today's show was a test. If I ever get on this show and tell you that I think that Washington State is beyond saving, or that any state in our nation is beyond saving, or that our country is beyond saving, that's when you should cancel your subscriptions to Undivided, and that's when I should quit my job. Because if I do this show and I don't think that we're doing it with the possibility that we can make our state a better place and our country a better place, then I shouldn't be doing the show at all. So yes, Washington State can still be saved. That doesn't mean that there aren't some things that happen here that really have us questioning how far gone we are, how much effort it is going to take to get us back on track. And what's happened over the last 4 to 5 days in particular is an example of that. And actually, one of the crazy things happening here got the attention over the weekend of President Donald Trump himself. We actually ended our last live show of the week last night by talking about the fact that Democrats in Olympia had decided to move forward with House Bill 1296, which will erode key aspects of the Parental Bill of Rights. And that's not a surprise. I mean, they're doing that for their cronies in the teachers union. They don't care about parental rights. They only care about family separation and family rights and the sanctity of a family and a parent-child relationships when it comes to illegal immigrants, apparently. But when it's the sanctity of your relationship with your child, they really don't care at all. And so that hearing had happened on Thursday. And at the time that we covered it, we were just getting word of this amendment that Representative Travis Couture had tried to introduce to at least improve House Bill 1296 just a little bit. And I'll actually play. Can we start with the Travis Couture cut, Nicole? So Travis Couture, Republican state representative, is on the House Housing or House Education Committee, and he knows that House Bill 1296 is going to advance out of committee. But there's this element of the bill that basically says that if a student says that they've been the victim of a sex abuse, just as an example, at the hands of a teacher or a staff member at their school, the language in the law that they're pushing through basically says the school must, at the first available opportunity, but within 48 hours, notify a parent. And Travis Couture is a parent, and he saw that, and he's like, what? He's like, why would we not make the law say immediately? Why would we give them 48 hours to tell a family that their child might have been sexually abused by a teacher? Here's the audio that we did not have on Thursday of Representative Travis Couture introducing that amendment.
The underlying bill essentially states that schools can wait 48 hours before they tell parents if their children were involved in any kind of criminal action or if there was any sexual misconduct of staff. We have seen a stunning amount of sexual misconduct and sexual assaults by educators in our schools just in the last year itself, including two principals in a Vancouver school district that hid from parents a rape, a statutory rape of a 16-year-old female student in their school by one of their staff. Now, as a parent myself, I would be disgusted and sickened to know if my kids had some kind of sexual abuse put upon them by staff, and I wasn't notified immediately of those things. Now, this happened actually in my kids' school district, where an eighth-grade school teacher was grooming and having inappropriate sexual relationships with eighth grade boys. This is all too much commonplace, and parents deserve to know right away whenever there is any kind of criminal activity or sexual abuse or sexual allegations of staff that goes along with the safety of their children. For God's sake, please vote yes.
But of course they voted no. It's just stunning to watch that. And then, moments later to have Democrats turn around because they're the majority in the legislature and on the committee and reject an amendment that should not be controversial. I want to play for you. We haven't played this or talked about it yet. What the argument was. Like, why would they do that? Right? Why would they say that a parent doesn't have the right to immediately know if something serious happened to their child at school at the hands of a teacher or a staff member? This is Democratic State Representative Lillian Ortiz Self.
As a school counselor, one of the first things we're trained is how to deal with these situations, and it's very clear that we take direction from law enforcement and from the Department of Children and Family Services whenever there's a crime that has taken place, and that we must adhere and give them the time to do the investigation so that justice can be served. Our role in the schools to support the child and support the parents. Their role is to do the criminal investigation, and we cannot in any way impede that. And so in the for justice sake, we are told to take the direction from them, and that is what we do, and that is what we train our staff to do. And so I'm going to urge a no vote.
What an absolute bullshit statement. I mean, I could tear that apart piece by piece. First of all, when have you ever cared about doing what police tell you to do? I mean, these are schools that are trying to keep school resource officers out of there because police bad, police racist. Right now, schools in Washington State, including the Office of Superintendent and Public Instruction, are pushing down guidance to help students and schools make sure they don't cooperate with law enforcement and ICE. You don't care what police tell you to do. You've never cared what police have told you to do. And Democrats in the legislature have never respected law enforcement in any way. So now you're using your supposed respect for the rule of law and for law enforcement and their investigations to justify not telling parents that a teacher or a staff member is accused of potentially sexually assaulting a student. Like, give me a break. And if there is a law enforcement agency that is going to a school and saying, hey, don't tell the parents yet, then that law enforcement agency should be getting just as much criticism as Democratic lawmakers are right now. So there is nothing at all that Representative Lillian Ortiz Self said right there in rejecting that amendment that makes a bit of sense or that justifies not telling a parent that something serious has potentially happened with their child at school. So give me a break. This is all about protecting the teachers' union. This is all about giving the teachers' union 48 hours to get their stuff together and to defend their teacher or a staff member against accusations that a child is levying. That's the only thing that it's about, because the Washington Education Association is the most powerful entity in the state, and they bankroll Democrats' campaigns. So Democratic politicians, including Representative Lillian Ortiz Self, care more about the unions that bankroll their political campaigns and their political futures then they care about families and children. So give me a break. And this went all over the weekend, and understandably so. I'm actually surprised more things that are happening in Washington State don't catch the eye of President Donald Trump. President Trump had retweeted, Billboard Chris, who we've actually had on the show before, but he was retweeting Jim Walsh, the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, about this vote, that Democrats voted not to inform parents. And Billboard Chris was a little off in his interpretation. They still are supposed to inform parents within 48 hours, but it's the difference between immediately or 48 hours to give the police union or the teachers union time to cover up for teachers who do the worst of the worst things for kids. And all of this, I mean, it just, that amendment, them pushing through 1296 past committee so they can erode the parental bill of rights, and claiming that it's about like protecting families is so disingenuous. So you have that going on. And then you have, as we've discussed on the show, Governor Bob Ferguson, who's out there with these executive orders from the governor's office about protecting immigrant families, and Washington State cares about families and the bond between parents and children. All while Democrats in Olympia push these very clear anti-family, pro family separation policies when it comes to you and your family. And then what are we seeing? Oh my gosh, these protests, unrest over this ICE deportation separating families. Like, do you see this? And there was, this was all over. We'll play a couple clips. Even Alki Beach in Seattle, all these anti-ICE, anti-Trump deportation protests that are happening. This is from the Post-Millennial out on Alki Beach. Like, look, you have a right to protest. If you want to go out there and you want to peacefully demonstrate and peacefully protest and say that you're not in support of the deportations that Trump is carrying out, like by all means, but many, many of these across the country were not peaceful. We'll go to LA. I mean, the stuff that happened in LA over the weekend was insane. Absolutely insane to see what happened in LA, them taking over freeways and then police were all out there ready to arrest protesters and demonstrators and all of that. And then they just walked away at the last minute. So LA was absolutely nutty. And that just shows, like, they don't care. I mean, if you're out there and you're protesting something that they agree with politically, then they'll just allow you to be out there and just to do what you want to do. Literally, police just left. They were all lined up, ready to arrest protesters, and they just left. Who do you think ordered them to leave? So it's just totally disingenuous. I think we also have some video out of Dallas, if you want to roll it, Nicole. I mean, the same thing happening all across the country, and it's this totally false narrative that there is some sort of, like, targeted enforcement against immigrant families going on, and it's all just absolutely insane. So all of that's happening. And again, there's this fear-mongering going on about, oh my gosh, they're going to tear immigrant families apart and all of this stuff. And I'm not saying that that's not happening at all. I mean, even Tom Homan said, hey, yeah, we can avoid family separation. You can deport families together if you have an adult, a parent who's been caught up in an ICE enforcement. Maybe they have some sort of criminal history and they have kids. And like, yeah, if they get deported, of course, the family is going to get torn apart. But all of this fear-mongering and focusing on that while Washington State is simultaneously like tearing families apart and keeping secrets from parents and pushing legislation to strip parents of their rights. Do you see how hypocritical that is? Do you see how hypocritical that is? And I would also say, it continues to be true that the Trump administration is focusing on targeted enforcement. I mean, up in Blaine sector of the Border Patrol here, they've been working with ICE and they've been pushing out all of these. Every time they arrest a criminal illegal alien, they've been pushing out their photographs of them being arrested and a little bit about what they did. And I mean, they are scooping up people daily for child rape, possession with intent, domestic violence, assault, battery, harassment, DUI, reckless driving, obstructing an officer, eluding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. People who have been either deported from the country before or were ordered deported, and those deportations were never carried out because of sanctuary policies that shielded them. I mean, who's out there? Show me a protester who's out there saying, hey, we support the, you know, the child rapists being removed from the country, but we're out here protesting the people who aren't child rapists or aren't repeat criminals being scooped up. No, there's no nuance there. No nuance whatsoever. And what I'd say about the whole family separation, besides the insane hypocrisy that's happening in Washington State, totally fine to separate your family, totally fine to erode the relationship between you and your kids, not fine to scoop up criminal illegal aliens because it might result in them being separated from them, their children. And one of the things I would just say about that, like this whole idea of family separation, let's talk about that for a second. What could characterize as family separation? If you go out and let's just give somebody the benefit of the doubt, you, because what I hear and what I hear on social media is, you know, these are parents who are trying to build a better life for their kids and they shouldn't be punished and torn away from their kids or whatever it is. Let's say you go out and you steal from a store because you're poor and your kids are hungry and you go out and you steal a bunch of stuff from a store and you get caught and you get arrested and you get put in jail. That's family separation, is it not? There are plenty of things that parents do that result in separation from their kids. There are plenty of decisions that parents, be they Americans, illegal immigrants, whatever have you, that result in separation from their kids that we never see these protests over. I mean, are you going to start protesting when a parent commits a crime and they go to jail or prison and that's family separation? Like, that's, the parent did that and there's a consequence for that. There's been family separation going back to the beginning of time. When you do something and as a result you're getting arrested or whatever it is, there's family separation there. But for some reason, there's only protests in the streets when that family separation has to do with people who came into the country illegally. Like, why aren't you protesting outside the jails about the family separation involved in everybody being held at the King County Correctional Facility or in our prison system? Like, let them go. Are we going to advocate for them just to be let go? or their crimes, like we just ignore them because if we do something about it, it would result in family separation? No, like family separation is a decision that someone made when they engaged in criminal conduct. But it's only, because this is just about, it's just about trying to appeal to emotions. That's how Democrats, we talked about last week, that's how Democrats try to get votes, try to stay in power, is they want you to be scared, they want you to appeal to emotion and not like have your brain think. Like, what do you mean? Families are separated all the time. I drive home drunk, get picked up, you're going to be separated from your family for a couple days. Commit some sort of crime, you might go be separated from your family for years. And we act as if that these parents didn't come into the country maybe with their kids or maybe they had kids here knowing the fact that at any day they could be separated from their family. That's always been the law in the United States, that you can be deported, that you can't come here illegally. It's just a matter of now we have a president who's actually enforcing it. So the whole thing is a total farce. The outrage over it is absolute hypocrisy. It's meant to stir up emotions. I mean, there was all these stories over the weekend of people going off half-cocked on social media saying, oh, I saw police here. It must be an ICE raid. Oh, ICE is raiding this restaurant or whatever it is. And it turned out just to be a regular, like, police investigation. So this is about getting people spun up. It's about appealing to your emotions and your heartstrings and whatever it is. And again, like, somebody tell me, I want these people who are out there protesting, When I show you the pictures of Border Patrol in Washington State rounding up all these repeat criminal aliens who've committed child rape, DUI, reckless driving, and don't forget it was reckless driving that got Washington State Patrol Trooper Christopher Gadd killed by an illegal immigrant who plowed into the back of his vehicle on the side of the roadway before you're quick to diminish an illegal immigrant committing reckless driving. It's just insane stuff to watch it. Total hypocrisy. Washington State Democrats don't care about families. They just care about what is going to get me votes, what is going to get me back in office. Eroding these familial relationships is fine. Eroding these familial relationships, not fine. We need a protest in the streets. Like, give me a break. It's absolutely insane to watch this happening. I mean, hopefully, I don't know if the Travis Couture amendment and I mean, it got shared by like libs of TikTok, President Donald Trump, all over the place. If the backlash over that is going to make a difference in their decision to move forward with 1296, probably not, because they don't fear electoral consequences in Washington State. But all we can do is just raise holy hell about it, point out the clear hypocrisy and lack of morality and attack on nuclear families and just hope that maybe there's a couple Democrats who can come to their senses and do things a little bit different. But also just Border Patrol and Blaine Sector absolutely rounding them up. And that we should all celebrate that. We should all celebrate that. Bob Ferguson was the public safety governor, the public safety candidate. That's what he sold himself as for a year and a half. We're going to like improve public safety on the streets, give law enforcement what they need. Oh, except when it comes to ICE rounding up child rapists. That's bad. It's just insane. Any reasonable minded person like John Fetterman, Senator John Fetterman, who came out and he voted in favor of the Laken Riley Act. And he said, hey, supporting immigration, I can do that and also support a secure border. I can support immigration. I can support Dreamers getting citizenship, but I can also support ICE deporting violent criminals. You see how you can do all of that at once? But Bob Ferguson can't, because of course he has to placate a certain segment of his base. All right, coming up next, I want to talk about the extent of government overreach that's happening right now in Olympia. Apparently they have nothing better to do than to regulate the number of items that you can scan by yourself when you're at a self-checkout at a grocery store. Yeah, top priorities in Olympia. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy the things they offer, you're just not going to see anywhere else. I mean, they have the Listing Boost concierge service, which means they can come in, they can help you with cosmetic upgrades, they can even manage those projects and help you pay for it up front if that's going to be helpful to you, anything he can do to take stress off of it. Listener Sue told us that when she went to sell her home because it was time to move, be closer to her mom, she was really hesitant because of the time of year. She didn't want to list her home in the winter, but Wes put her at ease.
It's time for me to go home, back to Wenatchee. That's where my mom is, and she's getting up there in age. So I need to help her and start thinking about my own retirement. So
did you feel like, I mean, get the sense that Wes like had a plan, knew what he was talking about? I mean, how comfortable did he make you during the process?
Oh, he made me feel very comfortable. He answered all my questions and he responded to them by email or text, whatever I needed. Just kind of an extra helping hand here and there whenever I needed it. He was always there to support me, and his team is just wonderful.
Yeah, and that's what we always hear about Wes, communication. I mean, selling your house can be a really stressful time. You might be on a time constraint. You might be worried about, you know, what's the market going to do? Am I going to get what I need out of my house? And Wes is just, his communication is the thing that everyone who works with him stress is just so good. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, so the government, I mean, if you're in a state like Washington, they've never met an industry they didn't want to further regulate. And this one just struck me because, first of all, it seems so unnecessary on its face. But when you dig deeper into the proposed legislation, you will start to understand what the real motivation is behind it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action by signing up for their newsletter at future42.org and be alerted to opportunities to get involved, which we all need to do right now. All right, I want to introduce you for the first time to House Bill 1739. So House Bill 1739 was just recently introduced, and it is a bill that regulates self-checkouts at grocery stores. Stay with me here. First of all, you all know that self-checkouts are my arch nemesis. I've talked about this on the show before. I would rather wait in a line for a human checker who's 100 years old and checking out things one item per hour than I would get into a self-checkout line. I just hate it. It never works. It always beeps at me. It always embarrasses me by flashing and suggesting I stole something or put something in a bag that I didn't pay for. And then you have to wait and it flashes and someone comes over to you and they check it like you're a common thief. Hate them.
Wow. I had no idea.
Despise them with the heat of 1,000 suns. That being said, I don't think it's the government's job to regulate them out of existence. And that's really the purpose of House Bill 1739. So as you kind of start to read into this, like, look, okay, maybe, you know, there's some reasonable regulations and safety stuff on workplace if you've got customers who are checking themselves out, whatever it is. But the clear intent of this is to make them obsolete. This is a bill for labor. This is a bill that Democrats have introduced to please their cronies and allies in labor, because they don't want the self-checkout to replace a real human person. And for the record, I don't really want robots or self-checkouts to replace real human people either. But one of the very obvious things, I think, to anybody watching this who thinks independently and has really any brain cells, is that why do you think so many grocery stores are relying on self-checkouts? Anybody? Why do you think that they have to have so many self-checkouts? Nicole, do you have any ideas? Like, any ideas at all?
Because of the minimum wage.
Wow.
And wage costs.
You must be real smart to put that one together. So we have, our minimum wage has skyrocketed. Regulations on businesses have skyrocketed. Not to mention the insane mandates that were put down during the pandemic that made it necessary for the survival of these grocery stores to invest in this technology at the cost of millions of dollars to their bottom line. So now they've got them there because it was like, either you got them or you can't operate during the pandemic, essentially. And now it's like, no, we want to take them away because we don't like the fact that these self-checkouts are becoming more and more common. They're replacing one of our friends in labor, a job that should go to a person. But you've made it So you've made it so expensive that they can't afford to keep people on staff and hire people to man all the manual checkouts. So then they resort to, okay, well, let's put in more self-checkouts. Well, now you don't like that. So you want to take away self-checkout as an option, which is the intent of this bill. I'll get to in a moment. So what option are they left with? Just closing. Because they can't manufacture more money out of thin air. So if they didn't have enough money to pay a real person because of all the regulations and the increased minimum wage, so they hired a machine, and now you're saying, well, you can't have the machine either. What the hell do you want them to do? Literally, what do you want them to do besides just close? Is that what you're telling them? If you don't run your business in the way we want you to run your business, then you can just go out of business. That's the only option, right? Or to have like one man checkout stand in a line 60 people long, and that just becomes the normal, and we just have to deal with it because that's what the Democrats want. So this bill, again, House Bill 1739, it doesn't explicitly like prohibit or do away with self-checkouts, but what it does is put so many regulations on those checkouts that when you hear them, you'll know it's not going to be feasible for a grocery store. For instance, so here's just three of the stipulations that have to be met in order for a grocery store to have self-checkouts. All right, so at least one manual checkout station has to be staffed by an employee. So that seems reasonable, but that's not happening right now. I mean, I go to Safeway, and at some hours of the night, there's only self-checkout, and all the manual checkouts are blocked, so you have no choice but to go to a self-checkout. I mean, I've seen that at QFC. I've seen that at Safeway. So there's clear staffing issues where they're like, so they're saying you can't do that. If you have a self-checkout line open, there has to be a manual checkout option as well. And then it says grocery stores must limit the number of items a customer may purchase at a self-checkout to no more than 15 items, which is like, think about that as the government regulating that. The government's saying when you go to a grocery store, you can't use a private business's self-checkout if you have more than 15 items. They want to put that into law. Do you see how insane that is? That's big government. But think about that again, and you apply that to number one. What happens when you go to Safeway at 11 p.m. and there's only a self-checkout? Well, what if I've got 30 items? Can I just not buy anything? Can I just not buy anything? Again, they're making it nearly impossible for a self-checkout to be used. And then this one is, I think, the key, because anyone who's used a self-checkout at any grocery stores in our state know this. It says no more than two self-checkout stations are simultaneously monitored by one employee. So for every two self-checkout stations, there has to be one employee. So I'll just say at my grocery store, there's two different, one on each side of like by the entrance and the exit. There's two sections of self-checkout kiosks. And there's six at each. So there's six at each station. But what you're telling me is if they want to keep that station of six self-checkouts, that they'd have to have three employees monitoring the self-checkouts, or else they'd have to close down four of them, only have two of them operational, and an employee to monitor two of them. Why are they doing that? Well, because this is a bill for labor. Keep that in mind. As most things Democrats do, it is a law intended to help some sort of union. So this is a bill to help labor and to ensure that there are mandatory jobs, essentially, for grocery store employees, even though they have raised the minimum wage, so these places can't afford to hire that many grocery store employees. So they're like, well, a grocery store is not going to be able to do that. So they're just going to say, all right, you know what? Close down the self-checkouts, just put them at a manual checkout line, and let's just go back to how it is, but we're only going to be able to operate one or two checkout lines. So if that means that there's a line of 60 people waiting to check out, then I guess so be it, because that's what regulations have resulted in. I mean, are you with me here? Do you see how crazy this is? And you think about all the other crises we're dealing with around crime and homelessness and affordability, cost of living stuff, housing crisis, drugs, the fentanyl crisis just overflow with. And Democrats in Olympia are busy introducing bills to regulate the number of items that you can have at a self-checkout and how many employees have to be watching you while you check those items out. It's really insane stuff. I don't think Washington State is beyond saving, I would never say that and continue to do this job, but we're really heading really quickly down a path of no return. And we have to try to wake up our fellow citizens to the ridiculousness of this. I mean, who among us doesn't have a friend or family member who's just exhausted with what grocery stores have become? I mean, I complain about it all the time. Like, oh my God, I had to use the self-checkout because there was no real person, and that's fine, but then it was so long and all this stuff. Like, these are things, you know, it's not the end of the world, right? If I've got to use a self-checkout, or if I've got to wait in a long line at a grocery store, I guess it is what it is. But these are the things that touch and impact non-political people. People who so far haven't been engaged in the political process, who aren't talking about some of these bigger issues that we are around crime and homelessness. They're so disconnected from it. They're living in the suburbs and they're just trying to raise a family and all this stuff. I'll tell you what they will care about, though, if their local grocery store closes. I'll tell you what they will care about if they have to wait in a line of 60 people at the grocery store to check out. And that's your opportunity to communicate to them why that stuff is happening. And it has to do with the minimum wage. It has to do with overregulation. It has to do with Democrats being really in the pocket of unions and labor and pushing policies that benefit their cronies and their allies financially. Just insane stuff. You know what? If this goes into effect, I will be the first one at a self-checkout line with 16 items in my cart. And I will call 911 on myself, self-report, and encourage them to come and arrest me for breaking
state law.
Right,
are you the one that gets a fine, or does the store get the fine?
The store gets a fine of up to $10,000 for violating any of these rules. So you think you can play fast and loose with these regulations? You think you can allow that customer who's been coming to your store for 20 years to sneak in a 16th item? And you don't think that there's some labor union boss at that store watching out, just waiting for an opportunity to file a complaint? Because again, if the self-checkout systems go down, they're taken away and they can't use those anymore, then that's more jobs for labor. Although they're not thinking very far ahead, because that ultimately is going to be less jobs for labor when that store closes down, which will happen because they cannot print money out of thin air. Only the government can do that. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action. I have a lot of it today at future42.org. What am I going to do?
Well, no, they're just going to have you stop at 16, pay, and then start again, pay, start again.
Oh, you can only scan 16 at once. You scan your 16. There's and then you go to the back of the line. You scan your next 16.
Yep.
If that doesn't wake you up to, like, we have to do something different in Washington State, I just don't know what will. All right. So we had a fantastic episode of Sundays with Subscribers this week. Embattled Linwood City Council member Josh Binda is, I think, in a whole heap of trouble. And I'm not sure that his political career is going to survive this latest reporting from the Linwood Times. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Crazy, crazy stuff. So we've talked a lot about Josh Binda. He was a 21-year-old BLM activist when he ran for the Linwood City Council. And of course, if you're a young black man who wants to get into politics in Washington State, they're not going to look too closely at your qualifications or even your resume or anything like that. They're just going to be like, absolutely, how can we support you? More on that in a moment. But ever since he entered office, there has been a series of issues with Councilmember Josh Binda. Some just ridiculous, and some very serious. On the ridiculous side of things, he was on his Instagram posting shirtless photos of himself to pitch these speeches he gives to children at schools, which, you know, I think there's an immaturity and like a self-centered aspect of this, that he's just a narcissist and he didn't realize, like, hey, maybe when I'm talking about speeches that I give to school children, I shouldn't post a shirtless photo of myself, like, giving a sexual sort of look at the camera, you know. Again, 21, you know, I can't be held responsible for all the pictures I posted on social media at the age of 21. So some of that stuff I think would have been forgiven, but it just kept coming for Josh Binda. He had some serious PDC violations for misuse of funds. You know, he was using Linwood City Council chambers for political purposes and campaign purposes, or his outside, you know, speaking engagements to promote those, I think it was. So those were serious. He never paid his PDC fines. And then he went before the Public Disclosure Commission and gave him the most insane excuse I've ever heard for not paying your PDC fines.
Do you have access to a bank account now?
Well, I have access to a bank. I mean, this might sound young of me. I've never written a check or done a check before. I don't have a checkbook or any of that sorts. So the whole checking process is fairly new to me.
Yeah, maybe, maybe evidence you shouldn't be a city council member, or you're not mature enough or old enough to be a city council member, or you're in charge of like finances of the city and what the city spends money on, etc. If you don't know how to write a check, or you can't just Google it to figure it out, which is how most people in our generation and his generation figure out something if they don't know how to do it. So it's just all these things that kept adding up for Josh Binda. But he is, you know, he's survived all of that. His political career has weathered that storm. I do not believe it will weather this storm. So the Linwood Times late last week dropped this bombshell investigation into Josh Binda. The headline: new investigation, Linwood City Council Vice President Josh Binda alleged Everett address. So they find out through some tips and some sleuthing that more than a year ago, City Council member Josh Binda was evicted from the apartment he'd been living at in Linwood. And since that time, all evidence showed that he was actually living in the city of Everett, which, by our interpretation and the Linwood Times' interpretation of laws around this, he would not be able to continue to serve as a Linwood City Council member. But the allegations get much deeper than that and much more serious than that. This, again, from the Linwood Times. Linwood City Council Vice President Josh Binda was evicted from his Linwood apartment in 2023 and has been allegedly living at a South Everett address for at least the last 12 months he has served on the Linwood City Council. The other issue is that he apparently voted using his address he was no longer living at in Linwood, which of course is a violation of election laws. The Linwood Times says election records obtained by the Linwood Times indicate that Council Vice President Binda may have violated state and federal election laws by having declared the address he was evicted from in November 2023 as his home address with the Snohomish County Auditor, for which he then used to vote in the 2024 elections. According to the Secretary of State's office, Binda declared a Linwood P.O. box as the location to receive his mail-in ballot. Because, of course, if he had had it sent to his Linwood apartment where he was supposedly living, it would have been returned to sender because he got evicted from that apartment in the fall of 2023. The Linwood Times goes on to say the investigation further uncovered that Vice President Binda, 25 now, owes just over $18,000 in unpaid traffic citations, PDC fines, and several legal judgments against him. Records also show that within the last 5 years, Binda had a total of 18 court cases related to wage garnishments that involved the city of Linwood. So the Linwood Times, and all the credit in the world to the Linwood Times, we'll play some clips from the owner of the Linwood Times and the reporter on this story coming up in a moment. We had them both on Sundays with subscribers. So they find ample evidence. I mean, they spell it out. It's very clear that Josh Binda has been lying about where he lives, that he voted in Linwood and for all the races associated with someone who would vote from Linwood when he actually lives in Everett, representing the city of Linwood on the council when he's actually been living in Everett, has $18,000 in all these unpaid fines. So here's how City Councilman Josh Binda, again, now 25 years old, reacted, and only the way someone his age could react, to this reporting from the Linwood Times at the city council meeting that happened right after the story was published.
I have officially filed for protective order against Mario Lotmore and the owner of the Linwood Times for the safety of myself and my family. And I'm doing this because I don't want any other public servant or community member to be treated the way that I've been treated at the hand of his dangerous and gross misinformation as well as fake journalism.
Good grief.
I especially do not want any other young person who's bold enough to want to run for office and take part in our democracy to be treated the way I've been treated the past 4 years by Mario Lotmore and the Linwood Times.
What a narcissist. I mean, that's the only word that you can use to describe it. He has not provided any information that would show that the reporting from the Linwood Times was inaccurate. And he, I mean, this just shows he doesn't understand how things work. He went to court and he filed an order of protection against the owner of the Linwood Times, who didn't even write the story, by the way. It was a reporter named Keenan Briscoe. He asks the court to give him an order of protection against the owner of the Linwood Times, which, thank God, the court denied and said, basically, First Amendment. Like, the order from the judge was one sentence. It was like, this has some serious First Amendment concerns. And he's a public figure. News entities are allowed to report on public figures. That's not harassment. That's just reporting the truth. And that's what you sign up for when you decide that you want to be a public figure. What I also think is interesting, there's a couple things about that order of protection he filed. So Josh Binda goes to court again to file this order of protection. You want to guess the address he used to receive court documents back as part of this filing? He used an Everett address. So in filing the order of protection, the unsuccessful order of protection against Mario Lotmore, he actually listed an Everett address that was the address they said in the reporting that he was living at, not in the city of Linwood. So he just told on himself. He also inexplicably asked the court to like fine Mario Lotmore like $15,000, which...
Wait, no, it was 17 something.
Yeah, which first of all, if you're filing an order of protection, that's not a civil law. So you can't just say, right, I want an order of protection and I want $17,000. It's like, that's not a thing, right? But match that up to the amount of unpaid fines. What was it? He's got unpaid traffic citations, PDC fines, and other legal judgments. Those add up to about $18,000 in this order of protection against a newspaper.
He's just, I think it was 18.
He's just asking them for like more than $15,000 for whatever reason. Gee, fuck, takes a rocket scientist to figure that one out. So it's just crazy, but I laugh about it because it's so absurd. But we had Mario Lotmore on Sundays with Subscribers this week to ask him about all of this and just to talk about, I mean, because they're running circles around old media. You think that the Everett Herald and mainstream publications would have done the work to dig this stuff up and to find this stuff out up about Josh Binda? Of course not. Wouldn't have done that, in part because he's a young black man and you can't dig deep into the background of someone because their skin color gives them like some sort of extra protection in Washington State. So just, we talked about the Linwood Times, but also, as Mario Lotmore said on the show, the especially when it comes to potential voter fraud, right, and election integrity issues and state law, this could end up being a very serious legal situation for Josh Binda. What consequences do you think Josh Binda could face as a result of what the Linwood Times has uncovered?
I've had people call me, mm-hmm. Various from attorneys to non-attorneys. And if Councilman Binda continues, I think he is going to be in some serious legal, maybe even criminal, suffering some criminal consequences.
Well, because if you're lying on documents.
He's lying on documents. People are accusing him of possibly committing fraud in the sense of stealing money from Linwood, because if he wasn't eligible to be in that seat for a year and he's collected the salary for a mm-hmm. year, compensation, then that would be a legal challenge coming to him from residents of Linwood. Mm-hmm. He could face consequence with the Secretary of State's office if he is found that to not be a resident or that address is not legally where he lives. He could be suffering consequences there. I believe the lease would be a Class C felony.
Because you're voting Correct. In a district and for races that you shouldn't be voting for.
And then the consequence can go as much as 10 years in federal prison.
Yeah. So has he at all...
So I'm not taking it lightly because it's serious.
Oh, it's
and
very
I hope
serious.
He understands. And I just want to add that this is a disservice people do, also a community does. Remember, you ever heard of suicidal empathy? So you just have this empathy and you always want to show people compassion. Mm-hmm. You could show someone compassion to death.
Yeah.
You know? And... it's when we go back to Binda having with the PDC issue, the Attorney General's office really came harsh at him. They wanted to fine him $2,000 That prosecutor they had there, she was good. I mean, she was right on target.
Yeah.
And then the PDC laughed it off. I'm sorry, PDC. That's how it appeared. You guys laughed it off. You thought it was a political witch hunt.
Yep.
You then say, no, we're going to strike it down to $1,000. And then someone made a motion. Ah, we're going to waive the $500, in which he just had to pay $500 on the fine, in which he had thousands of dollars in misuse of campaign finances, in which he didn't even pay that, by the way, to this day. And so when you go through this history of constantly showing compassion and giving people grace, and then they don't somehow make a change in themselves, mm-hmm. what happens is that this person could have suffered a consequence here that may have been a life-changing consequence mm-hmm. for them, enough for them, not like really heavy penalty, but enough for them to say, okay, I need to change my behavior. So now look at what has happened. If we go over the years, and now a person, because he
got away with so much, and it's that small stuff, and then the ball just keeps rolling.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask you, do you think that this is, and I call it pathological altruism, which I think is kind of the same idea. Do you think it's because he's a young black man?
What do you mean by that?
Do you think that because it's a progressive place, he's a young black man who started off as a BLM activist, that he's getting this sort of hands-off treatment? Because he's used race. He has said that the attacks on him are about his race.
I'm going to be 100% honest with you.
Do it.
I come from a different country.
Yeah.
I come from the Caribbean. People from the Caribbean have a very different outlook when it comes to race. So I know this is not going to be a very popular answer, but your answer is yes.
Yeah.
The Americans suffer because of slavery, a white guilt.
Yeah.
They do. That's something that I can never get because I see it. I don't know why. I understand why I do. I don't want to sound ignorant. I understand why they do, but they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong feeling that compassion for people or feeling that, certain policies may have put someone in a certain place, but don't let that blind you to justify poor behavior that you won't accept for anyone else.
I'll just say it because I can say it and not get fired by anyone. If this had been a white council member, the Everett Herald would have been all over it. If this had been a white council member, he would have been shamed out of office 2 years ago. That's the bottom line. But because this is a BLM activist who uses race, I mean, you literally had the NCAA, the NAACP come in and say that after one of the PDC stories, I think, that this was about race, that people were targeting him because of the color of his skin. No, it was about his actions. And there's been so many actions, and I think this broader story, like, do I ultimately care about a single Linwood City Council member in the grand scheme of things? No, but this is about corruption. It's about the fact that it takes a new media company, an independent newspaper that operates with a handful of employees, to be able to dig this up and to have the courage to report on it. And it's all just insane, but it shows. It's all about this, like, identitarianism, hands off, oh, it's a young black man. I will say, so as bad as this whole story is, highly recommend you going to read the updates at the Linwood Times. As bad as it is, we're told today there is actually more coming out from the Linwood Times. So also on Sunday's show, we had Keenan Briscoe on. He's the reporter who actually wrote the story. And he gave us a little exclusive scoop about a story coming out about Josh Binda today.
There is something that we're looking into that I can share. So there seems to be some resume and bio embellishments. If you go on the city council website, he says that he attended University of Washington for business, but I confirmed with the University of Washington that there's nobody enrolled, nor is there an alumni that went to the University of Washington. We have yet to confirm that he got his engineering certification from Snow Isle Tech, which he's claiming to be an engineer at Blue Origin. I find it hard to believe that an engineer is working as an engineer without proper certification or degree.
Wow.
There's also seems to be some volunteerism embellishments as well, based off of some volunteers that allegedly worked alongside him.
Wow. I mean, if true, that's pathological.
The student body is another one. We confirmed with the Mukilteo School District that he wasn't a member of the student body. He claimed to be president. So
That's stunning, because these are things that, as you say, they're so easy to prove or disprove as long as there's a journalist with the time and desire to look into it. So they're saying they did a simple kind of look into his resume and his bio, and many key aspects of it are completely fabricated. And that story is coming out about Josh Binda today in the Linwood Times. Exceptional reporting. If you want to watch our full interview with Mario Lotmore and Keenan Briscoe about just navigating this new media world and also their reporting on Josh Binda, we just aired it yesterday on Sundays with subscribers. You can sign up $5 a month, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and go read the Linwood Times, support the Linwood Times, because again, no old media, no legacy media newsrooms are willing, I think, to do this reporting into Josh Binda. You know, when it grows to such big levels that they kind of can't ignore it, they'll put out sort of a tepid story or whatever it is. This is blockbuster. Potentially violating election law, lying about his address, is he even able to legally serve as a Linwood City Council member? And what about the salary he's been paid while he's been serving and not living in the city of Linwood? And then you have, according to the Times, a story coming out today that he has fabricated key aspects of his bio. This is insane stuff. Let's see the extent to which the Everett Herald is willing to cover this. The Seattle Times is willing to cover this. Mainstream news outlets are willing to cover this. The Linwood Times and new media is running circles around old media with a fraction of the staff, a fraction of the money, and it's because they're willing to actually do the hard work. They're willing to overlook his skin color and the fact that he was a BLM activist and the fact that whenever they do a story, people accuse them of racism, because to them, they understand the role of the media. They understand it's about holding powerful people accountable, regardless of their skin color or their gender or their sexual orientation. You don't get special treatment. And the Linwood Times has gotten all sorts of blowback, as I said, for this reporting about very clearly corrupt, inappropriate, maybe illegal conduct because of the guy's skin color. I mean, Mario Lotmore had a order of protection filed against him. Thankfully, it wasn't successful. But that's just insane stuff. So again, I'm watching legacy media very closely to see if they're willing to do this reporting or if they're so scared about being called racist or whatever it is. I also am taking bets for how long Josh Binda's political career can survive this. I say, I already owe you guys a steak dinner, which I need to make good on over the whole Joe Biden when he was going to resign thing. I say Josh Binda resigns by the 17th of February. Nicole, what do you got? What do you got?
I'm going to go earlier.
Earlier? That's 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
What's your...
I'm going to go Thursday. What's next Thursday? Let's go next Thursday. Is that
that's the 13th.
Valentine's Day? Okay, I'm going to go before Valentine's Day.
Okay, so if you win, does that cancel out the steak dinner I owe you from the... If you lose...
No.
Okay, so I still owe you a steak dinner, but you'd have to buy
it. I don't bet that steep.
That's fine. How about if you lose, you have to buy me dessert at the steak dinner I pay for the previous thing?
100%.
He does not survive.
I'll buy you lunch.
There's absolutely... Okay, gotcha. Okay, fair. You can make me a steak dinner.
Okay.
You know, with some chuck steak or something. Like, that's fine. Anyway, yeah, I'm curious what you guys think. We're getting March 11th next Friday. Absolutely not. Daryl says, please, Brandy, I'm hungry. You guys work out the time that I owe you your steak dinner thing. But anyway, exceptional reporting from the Linwood Times. I mean, just great job. I love watching old new media run circles around old media. I love watching it. And it's even sweeter when the only reason old media isn't touching it is because the color of his skin and they don't want to be called racist. Get a grip. Find a different profession, in fact. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about this whole tariff tiff between the U.S., Mexico, Canada. It's also the subject of our daily subscriber show poll. First, take the first mark challenge. I want you to, today, when you have some time this evening, schedule time to do the first mark challenge with First Mark Insurance. It only takes about maybe an hour over the phone to go over your current insurance with them, talk about your insurance needs. Maybe you have some new things that you need insured. You're not sure what to do. They'll go out. They'll shop the market for you. They'll come back with their recommendations. And we always hear from undivided viewers and listeners who tell us, why did I not do that sooner? Because they'll save thousands of dollars a year and have the same coverage or better coverage than they had before taking the First Mark challenge. And it costs you nothing. You don't pay to take the First Mark challenge. You never pay First Mark insurance for their services. And they have, like, I mean, I get just nice check-ins from First Mark all the time. Hey, Brandy, how's your insurance working out for you? How's everything going at the studio? To Mike and I, how's everything going? Is everything working out? You got your renewals coming up. We're kind of out there. They're proactively, every year when our renewals come up, out there doing it for us. We don't have to do anything. Undivided viewer Spencer says they saved him $1,600 a year. Chad says they're saving him $100 a month, so $1,200 a year. I'm not a math whiz, but 100 times 12, $1,200 a year, which is like, who couldn't use that? That's amazing. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, Trump's trade war. Love it, hate it, indifferent, waiting to see how it all plays out. We'll find out in our daily show poll. But first, so Trump came out and basically says, Canada, Mexico, you need us more than we need you, so we're going to implement these tariffs unless you do what we want you to do, etc. Trump came out and said, on Truth Social, I have implemented a 25% tariff on imports from Mexico and Canada, 10% on Canadian energy, and 10% and a 10% additional tariff on China because of the major threat of illegal aliens and deadly drugs killing our citizens, including fentanyl. We need to protect Americans, and it is my duty as president to ensure the safety of all. I made a promise on my campaign, and Americans overwhelmingly voted in favor of it. He goes on to specifically about Canada, which I think is funny because, like, he just had Justin Trudeau down to Mar-a-Lago, and Justin Trudeau seemed so happy to be there. Had him back this morning. Was he at Mar-a-Lago, or were they just chatting?
No, he tweeted this morning, and he's talking to him again this morning or this afternoon. So it's obviously he's made a little, hey, why don't you go check into this stuff, Justin, and I'll talk to you again this
Justin
afternoon.
Justin Trudeau, you're on your way out, so maybe, like, don't, because they were all like, oh, we're going to retaliate, and we're not selling American booze at liquor stores or whatever it is. So anyway, Trump went on to say, we pay hundreds of billions of dollars to subsidize Canada. Why? There is no reason. We don't need anything they have. That's so mean. Without this massive subsidy, Canada ceases to exist as a viable country. Harsh but true. It's just, therefore, Canada should become our cherished 51st state. Much lower taxes and far better military protection for the people of Canada. And no tariffs. So anyway, I think Justin Trudeau is trying to sort of work this out. He was playing tough yesterday, and there was some, I saw pictures from, like, Canadian liquor stores that were saying, we're not selling this American product anymore, or whatever it is. And the truth is, for a lot of American states, Canada is their number one trade partner. So we'll talk about the potential costs for Americans, because it would be silly to act as if there won't be, coming up in a second. But let's talk about Mexico first. So he announces these tariffs on Mexico, and Mexico and Canada want to play tough or whatever it is. Well, that lasted like 2 seconds. Trump came out and said, I just spoke with the president of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum. It was a very friendly conversation wherein she agreed to immediately supply 10,000 Mexican soldiers on the border separating Mexico and the U.S. These soldiers will be specifically designated to stop the flow of fentanyl and illegal migrants into our country. He went on to say, we further agreed to immediately pause the anticipated tariffs for a 1 month period, during which we will have negotiations headed by Secretary of State Marco Rubio. I look forward to participating in those negotiations with the president of Mexico as we attempt to achieve a deal between our two countries. I got to be mispronouncing that. Sheinbaum?
Sheinbaum.
That does not sound like a Mexican last name.
I know.
Name.
Yeah.
At all. I don't know. Yeah. But again, so he threatens tariffs and they're like, okay, we'll send 10,000 troops to the border to help keep out fentanyl.
She tried to play tough yesterday. Yeah. I thought it was, people were wondering if her and Justin were speaking and they were kind of in on this.
Oh,
like, let's make this hard for him.
Let him bully us.
Right.
Yeah.
And then she came out this morning and was like, never mind.
We'll send 10,000. But also, and she complained, I think rightfully so, about, hey, we also have Mexican drug cartel that are able to bring in some of these high-powered weapons that they're using to kill our citizens from the United States. So as part of this, the U.S. is also trying to help ease the flow of these weapons into Mexico. So it's a two-way street. And also having 10,000 Mexican soldiers on the border is also going to help you stop the cartels from bringing back. But if the cartels don't come here in the first place and they're not shuffling those things back and forth, like, that helps everyone, right? We're keeping everyone safer here. And I'll say, you know, I'm not one of those people who, if Trump does something, it's 100% right all the time. It's going to be the best thing ever for America. If he goes forward with those tariffs, there are, of course, going to be cost increases for Americans. And he even said that. He said this might hurt Americans for a little while. So I'm okay with policies if you're being honest about the potential impacts up front. You know, it's one of the things from the Biden administration. They totally gaslit us and were never willing to even admit the extent to which prices had gone up for Americans and some of the reasons behind that. And if you come out and you say, hey, we're doing this, here's what's going to happen. Like maybe inflation is going to go up and we know that and we know it's going to be hard for Americans. Here's why we think it should be done anyway. I have more respect for that. I always said that about Jay Inslee when it came to the Climate Commitment Act. And if he would have come out and said, look, this is going to increase gas prices. Yeah. The policy
is not pennies.
Yeah, the policy is designed to increase gas prices. But I think it's the best climate policy for the state of Washington and for this planet of ours. I would have still disagreed with him, but I would have had a lot more respect for him that he could just shoot us straight and just tell us so we could plan. So families that budgets were on the margins could know a year in advance, 2 years in advance, that gas prices were going to go up 45 cents a gallon. Instead, he lied and he continues to lie to this day. So there's a difference there, right? And of course, there's going to be costs for Americans. So many products, you might say buy American, right? There's a lot of things that aren't even made in America anymore. And it would take time to bring all that manufacturing, years and years and years. I mean, the number of things we get, I get, I know Nicole gets from China. Like if you can try to cut that off, like all the crap we buy, we don't need, like that's going to go up. And we don't manufacture those things here. So the trade with other countries is necessary. But when you're balancing, like, look, if we have an invasion on the southern border and thousands of Americans are dying every single year of fentanyl that's coming from China with the ingredients into Mexico up from the southern border, what's the trade-off here? Am I willing to pay $1.50 more for an avocado if it means that 10,000 of my neighbors don't die of fentanyl and all the associated crimes with drug abuse? Yeah. So you explain it to me that way. I'm willing to pay an extra $1.50 for an avocado or find an alternative and not buy an avocado.
Right.
Or, better yet, buy a California avocado. Even though I don't really want to help California either. But California farmers did nothing wrong. It's fine.
Again, I'm pretty sure that all of this is strategic. And I do think that there is something, I mean, it's very obvious he wants to do something big, as in change the map of that we have right now, whether it's Canada or Panama or Greenland or whatever it is, Gulf of America, whatever it is. He's doing something big. And I was reminded over, this is how things get done. Tariffs is how things get done in this country. This is how, that's how we became the country we are, is tariffs. And
that's how we got Hawaii.
That's how we got Hawaii. And that wasn't even that long ago. That was like 70 years ago. That's not even that long. And Texas and all the others. I mean, this is how you do it. This is how you get things done.
Yeah, and as long as it's not... It always has to be a balance. What's the harm versus the benefit?
Right.
Like cost and benefit analysis of it. And then you see in the long run, and I think you can't be too proud to walk away from a position if it proves to be too damaging to the American people. But all we want is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
All we want is authenticity. You tell us what you're doing, why you're doing it, how it's going to impact us, and then let us make a decision about whether we support it or not. Don't blow smoke up our ass like Jay Inslee. And it's just ridiculous. Just speaking, since you mentioned Panama Canal, Trump's really set on the... And I've been to the Panama Canal. It was lovely. I was in Panama. I had coffee at this cute little place where you're overlooking the Panama Canal. I did a little helicopter tour of it. Totally cool. Trump says that he still wants to take it back.
They violated the agreement. They're not allowed to violate the agreement. China's running the Panama Canal. That was not given to China, that was given to Panama foolishly, but they violated the agreement and we're going to take it back or something very powerful is going to happen.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't think that it's going to be given to us willingly, but, you know, depending on what sort of levers he and buttons he can push, I don't know. But the Panama Canal isn't just like, oh, that would be nice to have. He says we're being taken advantage of, like, hey, this would be a strategic thing for us to have in terms of safety, same with Greenland. So we'll see what happens at the Panama Canal. I'll say not at the top of my list of priorities right now. You know what is at the top of my list of priorities? Saving money, taxpayer money, by getting rid of every last ounce of DEI spending. It's never going to happen. Well, I'll say never. It's not happening right now in Washington State, but at the federal level, DOGE is at work. DOGE says it has identified around $1.2 billion in quick savings by cutting DEI across multiple federal agencies. It's just fascinating to look at this because it's like organizations that are like, why would you ever need to spend that much money on DEI? I mean, Bureau of Land Management, the Departments of Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, Education, Energy, Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, Labor, State Treasury, Veterans Affairs, FAA. Oh, that's another one with the whole DEI thing. So I'm fine with this. I think a question I continue to have about Doge, though, is it's one thing for Elon Musk and Doge to go through and identify cost savings for the American people and try to shrink the size of government. But we all know that Congress controls the purse strings. So a question I've always had about Doge is, to what extent can they just go in and say, we're cutting this? To what extent is it just them pointing out crap we're spending money on that we shouldn't be, and then leaving it in the hands of Congress to deal with? So actually, Trump this morning, was this this morning, Nicole? Mm-hmm. This morning gave me kind of an answer to that. He signed in an executive order that gives Doge the power to at least eliminate certain positions without having to go to Congress.
President, why is it important for Elon Musk to have access to the payment systems at Treasury?
Well, he's got access only to letting people go that he thinks are no good if we agree with him. And it's only if we agree with him. He's a very talented guy from the standpoint of management and costs. And we put him in charge of seeing what he can do with certain groups and certain numbers. The numbers, some of the numbers are horrible, what he's found. Elon can't do and won't do anything without our approval. And we'll give him the approval where appropriate. Where not appropriate, we won't. But he reports in, and he it's something that he feels very strongly about. And I'm impressed because he's running, obviously, a big company. Has nothing to do, if there's a conflict, that we won't let him get near it. But he does have a good natural instinct. He's got a team of very talented people. We're trying to shrink government, and he can probably shrink it as well as anybody else, if not better.
Yeah, so fine for him to cut positions, but that's not going to lead to very much. If that's the only authority Doge really has, is to eliminate positions, I mean, that's a big part of it. And I think the whole, like, offering federal employees buyouts, very generous buyouts, by the way, way more generous than you'd ever get in the private sector if they don't want to come back to the office and they just want to bow out of their position. So that'll help a little bit. But ultimately, Congress does control the purse strings. And so the ability of Congress, if Doge says, hey, here's all these things that we should cut, the ability of them to actually carry those cuts out is a different story entirely. So a lot of TBD there. All right, we're going to get to our daily show poll and a very special birthday song coming up next. First, Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital, they specialize in managing risk. We have Zach on the show every week. And right now, with everything going on in the economy and all the stuff we talk about on the show regularly, it's a really good time to just see if your retirement portfolio could use a second look. Could it use a second opinion? I mean, you get second opinions for critical health decisions and all of this. So why not get a second opinion with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital? You only get one retirement. We all have it all mapped out, how much we think we need to save for retirement, what we want our retirement to look like. But is your retirement portfolio being managed in a way that's actively mitigating the risk associated with investments? So Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital can help you figure that out. So if you do one of Zach Abraham's portfolio reviews, right now they can give you kind of an outlook for 2025. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible, totally free, no obligation. So you can sign up for one of those at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, in our daily subscriber show poll, speaking of tariffs and what President Donald Trump is doing, do you agree with the tariffs President Donald Trump has threatened to levy against Canada and Mexico? Yes or no? I think Nicole and I are both yeses.
I think it's just a TBD. I trust that it's the right decision right now.
Yeah, TBD, but open to the possibility that they're more harmful to Americans than we realize, I think. And I'm not an expert in economics. And I like to think I don't pretend to be. But, you know, I want to just be told the truth. I want transparency and then see what happens. Also, can I just say, I don't want to hear jack from anyone who was never critical about Biden's economic policy and now wants to be critical of Trump's economic policy. If your criticisms of economic policy stop at party lines, then you have absolutely no relevance and no credibility. So give me a break. All the people trying to fight me on X over that. I'm like, okay, show me where you said anything negative about Biden's economic policy. I'll wait. Beep. Crickets. All right. Robert Parr says, I think it's a good tactic, but there are other factors that are in the mix. Canadian government is deadlocked and failing because of Trudeau. Will the Liberal Party pick another prime minister who is merely a Trudeau 2.0? Mexico is rapidly becoming a failed state because of drugs and the cartels, which are government facilitated. Sandy says, I voted no. In a negotiation where the one country can only sell their product to the U.S., this might work. But when there are lots of other countries that they can turn to sell their wares, not so much. Val Jean, Trump can do anything he wants and I will support those decisions. I don't want to imagine the disaster if the election had been stolen again. See, I don't want, and I encourage you not to ever be in a place where there's a single politician or political party who you'd never question. Because again, like, we can have our political loyalties, but I think blind political loyalty, whether it's to the right or to the left, is never a good idea. Like, when you can think independently and critically in coal balls and strikes, I just think it's a better place to operate. But yeah, you do you, whatever makes you happy. Kathy, Trump knows the art of the deal. I think tariffs are just his way of using leverage. I am quite sure he knows exactly what he's doing. I'll just do a couple more. Travis says, I'm sure it is a means to an end and a deal, but surely there are other arrows in his quiver. And we'll end with Sharon. I said yes, because from my understanding, they are a way of getting those countries to comply with the goals of the administration, such as securing the borders to help with illegal immigration and drug trafficking. Since these are positive goals, why not use the power available to the U.S. as the larger economy to achieve them? So, yeah, most people, 80% saying that they agree with Trump's tariffs and his plan, 20% saying no. All right, we have a very special birthday today on Undivided. I gotta get my me, how now, brown cow, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. A very, very happy 25th birthday to Miranda. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Dear Miranda, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Miranda. I don't know, it's not 25, but it's not my job to tell people how old she is. Although it's offensive that they think she's the younger sister. Look, I know she's prettier than me, okay? I know. It's fine. She's always been prettier than me, except when we were in junior high.
You look like twins.
Except when we were in junior high, she was a little weird looking. She was a little weird looking in junior high. She had real short hair. She used to dress real funny. But after that, she just blossomed, and I get it. Like, look, I look older than her. That's fine. Happy birthday to my beloved sister. Every birthday that you live through makes me happy, since we almost lost you a couple years ago. But and actually, in that one, oh my God, pull it back up. Pull it back up. She's wearing this. She's wearing my sweater. Look at the sweater I have on right now.
Oh my gosh.
She's literally, that has to be when she was visiting me.
It was. It was the post. I think it was she was here for your wedding.
She's literally wearing my sweater that was not planned, that I have on today. Good thing I remember her asking to borrow it, or we would have had a girl fight on our hands. Did you borrow my sweater without asking me? That's really funny. Good times. Love it. Okay, let's get to questions and comments. You know what's funny? I haven't actually like texted her directly or called her to say happy birthday. That's the first time I've said happy birthday to her.
Oh, I did.
Oh, so you said happy birthday to my sister and I haven't. What an ass. Not you, me. All right. Comments. Matt Gilbert with a $5 super chat. You could give up on Washington and start reading the phone book at noon each day, and I would stay a subscriber because we're whomies. Thanks. I appreciate that. Hashtag whomies. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. Children's hospitals in this state are still mutilating kids and refuse to comply with Trump's executive order. This needs to get out, too. Dems don't care about kids. Yeah, and we'll have to see, because I think the executive order can't prohibit private hospitals from doing this, but it can eliminate funding. And to what extent, kind of similar to the tariffs, to what extent would eliminating funding sort of force their hands, so to speak? And we do know, we checked in with the Attorney General's office last week to see if they were planning to sue over that executive order, and they said they'd have more to come. So we kind of took that to mean yes, but they haven't done it yet, so we'll have to check back in. All right, on these crazy anti-family bills that are being pushed in Olympia, Charlie Kay, is that Charlie Kirk? I assume it's Charlie Kirk, because he must
probably. I'm sure he
spend
listens.
His noon hour watching our show. With all these crazy laws being introduced, is there any way to measure the consensus of how much they actually have a chance to pass? I would say if they're being pushed this quickly out of committee, they're going to pass. I mean, at the end of the day, like, Democrats can pass whatever they want. So, like, for instance, rent control. It got a hearing on the very first day of the legislature, and that was by design. And to think that they're not going to push that through, especially when you consider, with some of these bills, the interests of the unions involved, I think a lot of these bills we've been railing against, unless there's some absolute upheaval with the public and this absolute like grassroots movement and protests, I don't see them changing their mind because there's no electoral consequences. Now, will Bob Ferguson sign them? That's another question, because they don't have the votes to override a veto from the governor. I am very curious if he would veto rent control. I don't think he'll veto 1296 to upend the parental bill of rights because he answers to the teachers union. So I don't think he'd do anything that the teachers union didn't support. I think there are some bills that he has the potential, if he really wants to continue this moderate facade, that he has the potential to veto. But a lot of these bills I see getting across the finish line unless we can get enough people to care and start emailing in. All right. And I gave you a handy way to do that. Remember, you go Patreon Locals. There's an article I published last week. It gives you the links. You just click on it. You voice your opinion. Click on it. Voice your opinion. It takes 30 seconds per bill. All right, Captain Cranky Pants, could you imagine being a space alien and observing all this? It's a wonder they haven't put us out of our own misery yet. Yeah, the look on Travis Couture's face, I sent this out this morning, when he knew that his amendment was going to be voted down, he was just like looking up at the sky. And I just, it was like this, just bring the asteroid already. It was like this look of like, let's just end it. End it now. Fred Munson, the hike in minimum wage has caused prices to go out of control in Washington. The demand to increase minimum wage has been counterproductive. Right. Because you can want people to get paid a living wage, but how about instead of that, they get paid no wage. How about that? Instead of that, they're out of a job. And that's what happens when you have significant hikes. Because again, you can't just manufacture money. There's only so much profit for a business you can cut into. These aren't nonprofits. There's only so much profit you can cut into before they make a decision that they can't operate anymore. It's like they expect businesses to operate in a deficit.
Well, yes.
And just be okay with it.
Well, either that or they expect CEOs and all these people to get paid nothing. Well, right. Again, that's they don't work for nothing.
Right. And they're managing like, and I think some CEOs are overpaid, but they're a private company. And if they feel like that's what the market demands of them, then fine. Like that's, and also it's them that gets to make the decision. Do we close or do we cut the pay of our senior staff? Like they get to make that decision. To me, it's not up to the government to overregulate them to the point where they have no choice and their hands are tied. And it's certainly not the government's job to regulate how many items we can have in a self-checkout. It just drives me nuts. Now I feel like,
it's just so stupid.
I feel like I have to use self-checkouts as a matter of protest, and I hate them. I hate them.
I like them.
I hate them. I don't want to be. And then the worst part, when you have something without a barcode, God forbid, I want to buy a Roma tomato, and then I got to go in there for one freaking Roma tomato, and I got to set it there, and then I got to go look up item, and I got to type in tomato, make sure I pick the right tomato, and if there's two Roma tomatoes, one organic, one non-organic, it doesn't matter if I have the organic tomato, I'm putting non-organic, and that's my little screw you to the man, right? So I'm stealing.
The poor organic farmers that you're screwing over.
Like, look, I don't know if I grabbed the organic one or the regular one. I didn't check, okay? My self-checkout isn't going to be perfect. Like, God forbid I buy a medium soup at PCC. Now I got to go over there and try to find the medium soup.
Life is real difficult for you sometimes. Just
ridiculous. I know I'm not the only one who feels that way. I know I'm not the only one. Oh, God. Where am I at? Dennis, Nathan, how about they stop creating new laws until they've balanced the budget? Yeah, great idea. Brenda, 11 good. I watch 8 self-checkouts at the same time. I manage it just fine. See? And that's what it is. Yeah, I think there's 6 or 8 at mine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching it because you have to go over there if there's like somebody who buys booze. That's understandable. You got to do an ID check, right? But my number one chief complaint, and Brenda, you can tell me if this is probably the number one. You put a bag. God forbid. God forbid. God forbid you put a bag in the checkout section. You open a bag and set it there so you can...
Mm-hmm.
Before it knows you're gonna put a bag there, God forbid, and then it's gonna go woo 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 woo, and the cops are gonna come in. They'd be like, "Did you steal something?" I'm like, "No, I just put a bag here."
So the one little thing that I do support is not telling the machine how many paper bags you have
or plastic bags. That's a government.
That's government. Yeah. That is garbage.
How many paper bags did you use?
None.
Brought these ones from home. Oh my God, we should do a whole show on self-checkouts. And then we can have Brenda, you can be our guest. You can tell us all about self-checkout drama. Oh, I'm going to cry. On Josh Binda, Krista, you get caught, refuse to prove that the accusations are false, and then file a protection order. What do you need protection from? Words? Mm-hmm. Being told you need to face your own truth? Grow up, please. Yeah. Todd Welch, who's going to ask the councilwoman who gives him rides to and from the council meetings, dropping him off at the Everett apartment? So that, we talked about that in the
interview.
So one of the reasons why the Linwood Times in the Sundays with Subscriber interview started looking into this is Mario Lotmore was outside city council after a meeting and he heard a councilwoman offer to drive Josh Binda home. And that was weird because, and he had said he'd taken the bus there, and it was weird because I think Mario knew that he lived really close by. And so that's kind of what, like, why would you need a ride home and why'd you take the bus here? That doesn't make any sense. So yeah, that's the thing, is we need to ask Mario Lotmore, who's the councilwoman who's bringing him presumably to and from his apartment in Everett, who didn't blow the whistle on the fact that he's not even living in the city of Linwood.
Right.
Fascinating. Good point, Todd. We're on it. Matthew Cook, living in the city you serve.
Never stop Lisa Herbold.
Oh, living in the city you serve, never stop Lisa Herbold, the grandma with the nose ring, cool and edgy. I actually have never believed that she lived in North Bend. I never believed the rumor that she lived in North Bend and not her West Seattle house. Because, like, look,
I mean, I believe she has two houses, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty...
Or one was, like, a husband's business thing. Only because, like, there were plenty of people who lived in that area who said she was always at her West Seattle house. So I never believed that one, but yes. let me see. Jason M., DEI is a money laundering scheme. 100%. The only people who are mad about DEI are A, people who aren't qualified for their jobs, or B, people who make money off the DEI bureaucracy, which is so many. All right, let's do one more. Tanya, excellent Trump. We are being than taken advantage of, chewed up and spit out. Why the hell do we sell American farmland to China, not too far away from military bases? Why? I agree with that. China should not own an acre of farmland in the United States. They own farmland in Washington State. I know there's a big thing in Florida with them prohibiting China from buying up farmland and even from buying homes in Florida, like Chinese nationals with certain ties to the CCP. There's no reason China should own any farmland in the United States, although they keep regulating farmers out of business, and it's like, okay, either China's operating that farmland or no one's operating that farmland. So they make it easy for China to operate it, they make it hard for small mom-and-pop farms to operate it because they want to regulate them out of existence and then cry because China owns farmland. It's just absolutely insane. All right, speaking of DEI, let's get to our closing sanity check. Oh my gosh, do yourself a favor with a couple drinks, of course, or weed, and go back and watch the DNC meeting from over the weekend. I just think that's the only way that's going to make it tolerable. Either marijuana or alcohol, right? So they're voting on a new DNC chair and also DNC vice chairs, which, oh my God, David Hogg got named one of the DNC vice chairs.
I know.
It's really funny when you look at where it ended up. Like, their chair is a white dude from Minnesota, right? But that didn't stop them throughout the meeting from literally their rules mandated at the DNC that they had to have a certain number of non-binary people in the sort of final list for the DNC chair. This is honest to God, an actual clip from the DNC meeting.
Rules specify that when we have a gender non-binary candidate or officer, the non-binary individual is counted as neither male nor female, and the remaining six offices must be gender balanced. With the results of the previous four elections, our elected officers are currently two male and two female. In order to be gender balanced, we must elect one male, one female, and one person of any gender. So again, this is what we have to do for this vice chair race.
Have to.
We have to elect one male, one female, and one person of any gender. To ensure our process accounts for male, female, and non-binary candidates, we conferred with our RBC co-chair, our LGBT caucus co-chair, and others to ensure that the process is inclusive and meets the gender balance requirements in our rules. To do this, our process will be slightly different than the one outlined to you earlier this week. But I hope you will see that in practice, it is simple and transparent. The order of balloting is designed to ensure equal access to the ballot, regardless of gender identity. As we must elect a candidate of any gender as well as one male and one female vice chair, we will first ask members to elect a candidate of any gender on the first ballot. Any candidate, male, female, and non-binary, can be elected on that ballot. After a candidate is elected on the first ballot, we'll have one officer of the three, so then we will know which position is filled of the one male, one female, and one vice chair of any gender. Our second ballot would also be for a candidate of any gender. Then our third ballot will be the third position that is remaining based on the two results. Either a male candidate, if a candidate that is not male has not been elected, or a female candidate, if a female has not been elected.
Yeah, it seems like the Democratic Party has really learned its lesson from 2024. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Hit that like button before you take off for the day. Have a fantastic day. We'll be back here tomorrow at noon. We've got a lot to talk about. We need people to show up for some of these bills in Olympia. So we'll be talking about one opportunity if you're in favor of school choice that's coming up on Thursday. Gosh, we got a ton to do. Go support the Lynnwood Times today, or go support some sort of new media outlet that's doing the work that old media isn't. I'm looking out for that Lynnwood Times story to drop on Josh Binda manufacturing aspects of his resume. Who would have guessed? Not me. All right, and happy birthday, Miranda. Happy birthday to my lovely older sister. Much older. That's it. All right, see you guys tomorrow at noon.